Hello, everyone. Welcome back to your 2024 October 21st GPSA meeting. I'm going to be calling this session into order. We are going to a roll call attendance. Roll call vote is crazy. Take it away.
Francine Ackland.
Here.
Samantha Bloom. Nicholas Brennan.
Present.
David Brown. David Brown.
No.
Cameron Chappelle.
It's Chapel, but.
Oh, Chapel. Sorry about that. Jason Chavirko.
Present.
Laurel Douglas. Andy Garcia Ortiz. Irene Gattini.
Present.
Elizabeth Gatz. Alicia George.
Here.
Dinesh Gemeyer. Trinica Hampi.
Here.
Mac James.
Here.
Ayushi Kapoor. Srikanth Karaikal.
Here.
Ocean Kareem.
Present.
Anurag Koyata.
Present.
Abel Agressa.
Present.
Alex Lando.
Present.
Zongyam Liu.
Present.
Sandra Lynch.
Present.
Salman Matan.
Present.
Clarice Meffert. Tian Nguyen. Kunj Patel. Angel Puder.
Here.
Seem Sepp.
Here.
Cindy Wong.
Present.
Yuting Wu.
Present.
Issa Yeya.
In that quorum?
I think we have.
Yeah. Sweet. Do you, what's the specific number?
Twenty-two.
All right, 22 people in attendance, meaning 2/3 is 15 votes, simple majority is 12, and 1/3 is 8. Good to know. All right. At this time, we're now going to move over to approval of the October 7th meeting minutes. Please take a look at the meeting minutes. In the packets. Let us know if there's any updates that need to be made. Wow, those 6 pages. Beautiful. Let's know if there's anything that needs to be changed with the annotation. Those requests for changes.
A lot of information. That's fine. Would you print double sided? Because this is single sided, I feel like it would be more environmentally friendly.
Yes, of course. Can we make that arrangement next time? Thank you.
You're the best.
All right. Thank you so much. Do we have any other questions, comments, concerns? If not, would we entertain a motion to approve the minutes?
Motion to approve by amendment.
All right, is there a second? All right, any objections? Once, twice, seeing nothing. Great, minutes have been approved. Mazel tov. All right, we're gonna move into reports of officers and committee updates. Up first, we have our executive committee updates led by our VP, Nicholas Brennan.
Thank you. Today we'll have a presentation by Katie King, who's here with us today, the Associate Vice President for Institutional Equity and Title IX. She'll be presenting on Policy 6.4, Prohibited Bias, Discrimination, Harassment, and Sexual Misconduct. Here now. On November 4th, we'll have Joel Molina and Bridget Brady to give a presentation on campus transportation. And at the following meeting on November 18th, we plan to have Dean Berry in to discuss the express activity policy, the draft express activity policy, and potentially a separate presenter from TCAT representing the Tompkins County Transit. So to our new members, we haven't had so many presentations thus far this semester. However, it's a kind of a staple piece of GPSA meetings that we use our space to hear from various offices around the university to learn more about the resources available to graduate students and how they can be improved for our use. Yeah, that concludes. Yeah,
right, thank you so much. I'm gonna assume there's no questions, so we'll move right along, unless if anyone objects. No? Okay, great. All right, gonna move into operations and staffing committee, led to you by our VP, Xander Lynch, whenever you're ready.
All right, so we have a couple of different things. So today we will have some more external committee vacancies that we're trying to fill. Some will be the same as you saw last week, and some will be, or 2 weeks ago, whenever it was, and some will be new. So be looking at those. Also, one that is not on here, but that we will be doing in the future, and that you I really would like some people for, is the Big Red Barn Steering Committee, Planning Committee, which has kind of fallen off in previous years, really since COVID. But we fund them with a good amount of money, and so we want to make sure that we have that open channel of communication. So please, if you or anybody you know who is a graduate student or a professional student wants to be involved in steering what the barn does and in giving feedback to that end, please make sure that they are coming to these meetings and make sure that, or make sure that they contact me, because we will be taking nominations for that probably starting next meeting. So be thinking about that. Finally, so aside from external committees, what we also have is these maps. So if you are interested in transportation and how we can help with transportation being better for graduate students, let me know if you would like access to these maps to do some sort of analysis. This one is gives each point is a graduate or professional student's address and how many people live there. And then this one is a heat map of how many graduate and professional students are in various areas. So if you would like to do some analysis or help us to collate these results, or this data, so that we can have something to present to TCAT and to the Transit Authority here at Cornell, that would be great. For that, please contact me, and I will pass your name and net ID along to Dean Gore and her office to get you access to that.
Thank you. Seeing no questions, beautiful. All right, we're going to move on to our Appropriations Committee. Well, actually not. Actually, Jessica, do we have any updates from David in regards to that?
Not that anymore.
All right, sounds good. We'll move into Finance Commission, as Andy did not give me updates to my knowledge either for communications. So Finance Commission, Anurag, hello.
No updates.
Do you have any questions? Yes, Jessica.
I have a question for Anu. The QR code link is not working.
Oh.
So I don't know if you need to update it, but people on Zoom have not been able to.
Hmm. I will say that it took me a minute to log in, but eventually, after waiting.
I do know that the when I scanned the QR code with my phone's camera, it worked for me, but apparently the text link doesn't work in the chat, so maybe like having the image up like might help.
You want to do that again for a minute?
Can you? Yeah.
All right, scan the QR code if you need to. You know who you are if you need to. Otherwise, don't scan random QR codes.
You like a little
game. Maybe. All right, seeing no questions, we're going to move into our Student Advocacy Committee. Yes. Wait, where? Oh, there you are. There actually is going to be stuff in the middle.
No, I'm good.
Sounds good. Do you have any questions? All right, sweet. Gonna move into our Diversity International Student Committee. Aishi Kapoor is in the Zoom.
She is not here, but I can, I'm also in the DISC committee, so I can represent for her. There's only one update from DISC, which is that we'll be hosting a public meeting on the 30th of October. The venue is still pending. However, we're estimating it'll probably be around evening time, like 5 to 7 p.m. potentially. And then we'll send out an email to all of the cultural and diversity organizations once we get more details on the event. But it's a really nice way if anyone has any diversity issues or international issues that they would like to address, I definitely recommend you going to that public meeting on October 30th, and more information on that will soon follow.
All right. Thank you so much, Francine. We'll now move into our programming board updates. Hello.
Hi. No major updates. I did send out the Gallup feedback form and the GPSA, and I actually got 3 responses. Whopping 3. So if you could just share that with your friends who attended the gala so I can get more feedback, that would be greatly appreciated.
Should I fill out the form?
You should. Why not?
You didn't already?
No. Am I supposed to?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
If you want to. So yeah,
we should.
Please fill out the form if you attended the gala and send it to friends who did attend the gala. I want as much feedback as possible, not just 3 people. And also I met with Nick this week to discuss a couple logistical things with programming board. Pretty much have my budget. And I'm looking forward to actually getting to play.
Beautiful. Thank you. Seeing no questions. Beautiful. All right. The TAM committee, the Faculty Teaching, Advising, and Mentorship Award Committee.
That's right. It's me. So I'm Jason. We have a monthly meeting tomorrow at 1:15 in 402 Biotech. So the people who are on the committee, I hope you show up, but otherwise everyone is always welcome to attend if they feel the need to have input on the very long committee name.
See no questions. All right. Graduate school updates. Dean Moore, hello.
Hello. Two items. One is the graduate school has been working to get our fabulous graduate and professional students in front of our trustees and alumni, and to that end, we showcased 6 graduate students at the trustee and counselor annual meeting on Friday, presenting an equivalent of their 3-minute thesis competition. So 1 static slide, and then they had to present their research within 3 minutes in terms that a lay audience could understand. And there were the room. Was nicely full of all kinds of folks who were there across various disciplines, graduates of Cornell. It was a glorious event that made me very proud of our graduate students. And we will continue to do events like this at reunion and other events when we have our alums here. So please be on the lookout for opportunities. We will be asking you. The second item is that we are we've now gotten permission to fill a position in the graduate school to support professional and career development in the humanities and the arts. And so stay tuned on that one as well.
All right. Seeing no questions for D4. Before I move on to presentation, Jessica, is Danielle Obisorulu in the Zoom?
She is not.
No. Also,
if she shows up, you want me to let you know?
Yeah, that'd be nice. Just so that, you know, have her to do introduction stuff. But for those that don't know, Danielle is our new student elected trustee as a graduate student for the Board of Trustees in Cornell. She is a second year PhD student in international relations within the Department of Government, and is really excited to foster belonging and equitable environments to benefit all Cornellians on campus, public students and the broader Ithaca community. Some of the things that she's interested in is campus community partnership, equity and justice, and access and transparency. So those are things that she's interested in passionately. More information about what she stands for, what she's interested in, can be found online as well. So if you have any questions regards to that and want to work with her, that might be a potential connection. All right. Without further ado, we'll move into our presentation section. led to you by our one and only Katie Kane. Please give her a round of applause.
Can I stand here?
Of course.
Can everyone hear me?
Yes.
Okay. So, hi everyone. I'm Katie, and I am the AVP for Institutional Equity and Title IX here at Cornell. And I started November 1st last year, so I have not been here quite a year yet. My background, I'm an attorney by training, and I refer to myself as like a recovered lawyer because I don't practice law, so I don't advise Cornell. I don't work in counsel's office. I was a federal prosecutor for the majority of my legal career, now reformed. And before here, I worked at SUNY Upstate Medical University in a similar role. So I was the institutional equity officer there. And our students at Upstate were only graduate students and professional students. We had many, many graduate students as well as medical students and then residents as well. So I am very familiar with working with graduate and professional students. And I'm familiar with the unique circumstance in which you find yourself. And I feel like the unique circumstances that you may find yourselves in when you interact with my office. And so I really think it's important for someone from my office to come at least once a year to this group and other opportunities to meet with graduate and professional students so that you know that we're here, you know that we're here for you, and I can remind you about what we do here on campus and how we can partner with you and assist you if you have the need for us.
Yep, I forgot to share it. So everyone on Zoom was not seeing. So let me just get that figured out while you talk.
So I'm gonna try to present for like 15, 20 minutes and then I'll have time for questions. So my agenda for today is I wanna go over the, basically the legal requirements that Cornell has to protect you based on your protected statuses. I wanna talk about Cornell Policy 6.4, which is the policy that we have here at Cornell for that. Talk about reporting and then take time for questions.
Is there a clicker? So I don't know.
No.
Oh, but that's
totally. So my office does four primary things. I call it four buckets of things. And really two of them may not apply to you in your situation as a graduate student, but I like to cover everything that we do because it's a lot. And so we receive all concerns, complaints about sexual and related misconduct that occur at Cornell and kind of manage those. And that can look like a lot of different things. And I'll get into that. We also do any other type of bias, discrimination, or harassment work that occurs here at Cornell that is not related to like sexual harassment. So that's the equity work that we do. We also do affirmative action and equal opportunity compliance on the employment side. So as you all likely know, the Supreme Court has said no more affirmative action in student admissions, but we still do affirmative action work on the employment side. And my office handles all of the affirmative action annual plans for each of the colleges and the units. So we do 20 affirmative action plans each year and we present out on them. We also do things about like filling vacancies and when can you get a waiver and when can you not. So in the next stages of your career, that may become more important to you at this or another institution. And then we also do all reasonable accommodations for employees. And so we do accommodations for disability, for religion. We do accommodations for people who are pregnant or have a pregnancy-related condition in my office for employees. For students, including graduate students, that still goes through student disability services. But I always say, if you ever have a question, please feel free to reach out to us and we'll send you to the right place or we'll figure it out for you. Like, if we don't have the answer, we'll get you to the person that does. Cornell also does do accommodations for folks who unfortunately are the victims of domestic violence. That's a New York State requirement. Our office does not handle that, but we can connect you with the office that does handle that if you should need an accommodation as a victim of domestic violence. So these are like the four things that we do. I think my next slide is just a picture of the people that work in our office. So if you call, you'll likely get Jessica Oren Detweiler, who is our administrative assistant, and then she will connect you with the person that you need to connect with in our office. We currently have a couple of vacancies. We're working really hard to become fully staffed. It may be no surprise that this work is difficult and there is a high turnover rate in investigating allegations of discrimination, harassment, and sexual misconduct. There just is in the world. So we often will have an open spot, but we're really looking forward to becoming fully staffed. We have an investigator position vacant, and then I just got approval for and published for a data analysis specialist, because I really want our the work that we do to be data informed and to really be try to be on the cutting edge of like what we're doing here at Cornell and how we're interacting with people. And I feel like data is the way to do that. And I'm looking for a person in our office that is interested in the work, because that's really important, and as a data expert. We are a bunch of kind of like, again, reformed lawyers and not data experts. I do my best with Excel, but it's not my strong suit. Can I have the next slide, please? Okay, so Cornell has a lot of obligations that we have to follow under state and federal law, and these are just some of them. This is not all of them, but Title VI and Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, Title IX of the Education Amendments of 1972, New York State Human Rights Law, and New York City Human Rights Law. All of these and more are encompassed in Cornell Policy 6.4. We include New York City Human Rights Law because obviously we have Weill Cornell, we have Cornell Tech, there's some ILR folks that are in New York City. And so we wanna make sure, and New York City has the broadest protections. So it's like New York City protections, New York State protections, federal protections, but we want to give everyone the broadest set of protections that we can. And so all of these civil rights laws are incorporated into our policy 6.4. Can I have the next slide? Thank you. Okay, so just briefly, Title VI of the Civil Rights Act. This has come up a lot recently in the past year, since October 7th of last year, a lot of people are talking about Title VI. Cornell has always protected people based on Title VI bases, but I just like to remind everyone what Title VI covers. So it covers basically discrimination is prohibited on the bases of race, color, and national origin. And that is all Title VI covers. But Title VI does say that national origin includes shared ancestry or shared ethnic characteristics, as well as citizenship or residency in a country with a dominant religion or a distinct religious identity. And so it's broader than you might think, right? It covers a broad range of categories of people. Title VI applies to Cornell because we receive federal financial assistance, a lot of it, like over $650 million a year of federal financial assistance in one way, shape, or form. Okay, the next one. Title VII applies to employees, but it's just important to know that Title VII covers race, color, religion, sex, and national origin as well. And then next slide, please. And Title IX is on the basis of sex, right? So Title IX says if you receive federal funding, you cannot discriminate against people on the basis of sex, which the current administration views to include pregnancy and related conditions, to include childbirth, termination of pregnancy, and lactation, as well as sexual orientation and gender identity. And I just want to make clear that even though the law says on the basis of sex and the current administration covers these things as well, New York State covers all of it, right? So like, regardless of what happens on the federal level with how presidential administrations interpret various laws or the Department of Education interprets various laws, New York State is always going to cover all of these protected statuses, at least for this foreseeable future. Okay, so Cornell Policy 6.4 is the policy that encapsulates all of these protections. It applies to everyone here at Cornell. If you are participating in a Cornell program or activity, Policy 6.4 applies to you. Policy 6.4 applies to Weill, it applies to Cornell Tech, it applies to Cornell-sponsored activities that are happening off Cornell's campus. If it is a part of our programs or activities, Policy 6.4 applies to the conduct that's occurring there. So I always like to show all of the protected statuses, understanding that not everybody is from New York, and people come here from many other places, and some states only protect the protected statuses or protected classes that are protected under federal law, and that's it. So if you're coming from one of those states, it might be a surprise to you that these are all of the protected classes that are protected in New York. Everyone in this room, everyone at Cornell, is a member of one or more protected classes. And that's always important to keep in mind when you're interacting with people, because some of these are obvious to an extent, and some of them are not. Some of them are invisible. Some you might not know, you know, how many of these protected statuses I'm a member of, but it's just important to keep in mind and know that you should not be treated differently here at Cornell. You should not be harassed based on any of these protected statuses. The ones that have the little asterisk, these are protected statuses that, in addition to protecting you from discrimination and harassment, you may also have access to an accommodation, a reasonable accommodation in your schooling or in your future, if you stay in New York, in your employment, right? So we do accommodations for disability, pregnancy or related condition, religion, and domestic violence victim status, as I said. The height and weight and the caregiver status, these are coming from New York City human rights law, right? So because these are protected statuses in New York City, they're protected statuses at Cornell. So even though, let's say you know, for example, had a job somewhere in Ithaca unaffiliated with Cornell, and someone is harassing you or discriminating against you based upon your height and weight, you likely would not have a legal claim of action against that local employer because they are not covered by the New York City human rights law. If this, though, however, happens at Cornell, you can come to our office and there may be a policy 6.4 violation. And I'll talk to you later in the presentation with what does it mean to come to our office? What does that look like? But does anyone have any questions on any of these? Sometimes I get a question on this slide. Okay, next slide, please. I always like to point this out, especially to graduate students and professional students. Retaliation is prohibited under policy 6.4. Retaliation is any adverse action taken against a person for engaging in protected activity. So what is protected activity? If you say, I feel like I am being discriminated against, or I feel like I am being harassed, that is protected activity. And you cannot be retaliated against for doing that. If my office calls you up and says, we have information that you may be a witness to an incident that occurred and we'd like to speak with you, speaking with our office is protected activity and you cannot be retaliated against for doing that. An adverse action and something that constitutes retaliation, like the bar is kind of lower than it would be for like what is discrimination, what is harassment. If there's an action that would deter a reasonable person from coming forward and saying, hey, I've been discriminated against, that is retaliatory and that is prohibited under Cornell policy. And I like to bring this up with graduate students because your relationship to the work that you're doing here and your education here, I think is different than undergraduate students. And I had this conversation a lot when I worked at Upstate, right? We've got people that are working in labs with like only a couple of other people and you've got your PI and this is a tight relationship. And a lot of your future is like tied to this relationship, right? So if your PI is harassing you, like, what are you going to do? There's a lot that needs to be taken into consideration there. I'm, you know, working with residents at Upstate, like they have people that they work with really closely. They're going to be giving them the recommendations for going on and potentially doing their fellowship. And do they feel comfortable raising a concern of discrimination and harassment? I understand this and our office understands this. And we want you to know that there's a lot that we can do to ensure that retaliation does not occur and we take it really seriously. I don't have like the asterisks here, but there's a ton of papers and studies out there about how graduate students underreport incidents of bias, discrimination, and harassment. And a lot of that has to do with fear of retaliation. And we don't want that. We do not want that happening. We want you to feel safe and comfortable here. And so we do have it's always going to be an individualized conversation, but please know that we recognize the unique situation that we're in, and we want to work with you to ensure that you can continue to be a student at Cornell and also not have to be subject to bias, discrimination, or harassment in your schooling. Next slide, please. Do I have a next slide? You do? Okay, great. So there's a lot of different ways that you can report to our office. So there's an online reporting form, and I share this. Will this get published, or will this get shared out, this PowerPoint?
It's up to you if we keep it public in the box folder. I don't typically send out the PowerPoint stuff.
Okay. Well, I mean, so I don't know. Cornell, like every other large institution, has just like a terrible website overall. Don't tell anybody I said that. But if you Google, you know, like Cornell bias reporting or Cornell Title IX or, you know, anything like that, you will eventually get to something that says file a report. I mean, here's the link, and I've embedded the link in this PowerPoint. But you can submit a report online. I always say, like, I make my husband call to order pizza. Like, I do not like to talk on the phone. I hate it. But I would file an online report, right? So here's an option for you. If you want to file online, you can also call us. The number's there. You can email us. We have two email addresses. And there's a long history to that. But essentially, the Title IX email address is for concerns of sexual and related misconduct. The equity email address is for everything else. But we put them both up and email whoever you want, or you can email me directly. And you can Google our website, and my email is right there. We also, our office is in Day Hall. Our hours are 9 to 4:30. We're there every day. People walk in at least once a week. We get somebody walking in to talk with us, and please feel free to do that. So the next slide talks about what happens when you come to us and reach out and file a report. So we get reports a lot of different ways. So sometimes we'll have, you know, a third person say, I observed this happen with person A and person B. So we'll read the report, and we will reach out to the impacted party. So the person that was on the receiving end of the behavior. And we will say, hello, we are the Office of Institutional Equity and Title IX. Here's some information for you. Here's resources. And would you like to have a meeting with us? And give people the opportunity to like review the information, see what the options are, and then decide whether they want to connect with us or not. There are very, very, very few instances where we will take any action without talking with the impacted party, because it is really up to you as an impacted party how you want something to be handled and how you want to move forward. But we'll always ask to meet, and we'll usually send a follow-up just to make sure that like the bases have been covered. And then we can provide assistance. And so I think a lot of people think, oh, I'm going to the Office of Institutional Equity and Title IX, this huge investigation is going to ensue. Everyone's going to know. They're going to interview all these people. Formal investigations is like a very small part of what we do. The majority of what we do is consultation and informal resolution options. So we can connect you with counseling services, victim advocacy services, medical services if you need. If we think a crime's been committed, we can give you the information for the university police. We do not report to university police. And so we do not, the only things that we report are anonymized for our Cleary reporting obligations, but we don't send over to university police names or anything, right? So we don't report to them. They report to us, but we do not report to them. Information, I mean. We can help with academic support and accommodation. So we can help with moving classes around if possible. We can help with anything that you can think of if you need like a delay in handing something in. If you need to, you know, something happens and you need a different seating arrangement in a class, or you need something and you don't feel comfortable talking with your faculty member about that, come to us and we can talk you through. Like we can, anything that we can think of that's possible, we can help you put into place. For employees, we can help move around job assignments, move work locations as appropriate and necessary. We can help students, folks with campus housing, if that's appropriate, with transportation services, and then with no contact orders. And so, no, all of this is non-punitive. So even a no contact order is a non-punitive thing. It's like, two people in this room, for example, had a no contact order, we would just expect them to like sit on opposite sides of the room from each other and not talk to each other, right? So it's not punitive for any party. It's just there to make you feel like I can access Cornell without having to worry about someone coming up and bothering me. And we put them into place between students, between employees, between students and employees. So we can do that. And then as necessary, we will do investigations. Again, it is very rare that we would ever do a formal investigation without the impacted party wanting that to occur. Very, very rare. And if we had to, it's because we think that based on information that we have, the conduct is so egregious and so concerning that it needs to be addressed in a formal investigation. And we would always keep the impacted party up to date and involved at every step of the way and really ensure that retaliation is not something that, you know, can occur, with the understanding that, you know, retaliation, it happens, but we do our very best to make sure that it doesn't, right? Everybody that we meet with, we talk with about retaliation. We put it in writing. We say it in every interview that we do, every meeting that we have. You cannot retaliate. Let's see. Next slide, please. Is there a next slide? Okay. So if you don't want to come to our office, if you don't feel comfortable coming to our office, we also do have confidential resources on campus that I want to make sure everyone's aware of. I'm sure you do know. The Cornell Victim Advocates are a great resource. The Ombuds is a great resource. I don't know if any of you have had occasion to talk with the Ombuds office. They are wonderful. They have information about all resources on campus. They're neutral and they can provide great advice as to like maybe what you want to do next. And then as appropriate, the Ombuds will contact me with permission of their, they call them visitors, with permission of their visitor. They'll put people in touch with our office if that's something that that person would like to do. Also CAPS, and I think there's like a different resource, I think, for graduate students. I'm not sure. Or do you have CAPS, which is the counseling? CAPS, okay.
You saw CAPS.
Yeah. And then there's also these offices that are also confidential resources, right? So Spirituality and Meaning Making, the Gender Equity Resource Center, and the LGBTQ Resource Center, all confidential resources here. Okay. That was all I had, and I think I went over a little bit on my time. But I'm happy to answer any questions if anyone has any.
Taking any questions?
Yeah.
What's the average timeline of one, like an average case? How long is the process beginning to end?
So it depends on the type of case. For Title IX cases, the investigation portion, we aim for like 60 to 90 days. And then there's the hearing portion. And this is going to sound like an excuse, but the hearing portion is kind of out of our control and is dictated by federal regulations, right? So we have the investigation done at 60 to 90 days, and then we have to schedule the hearing, and hearing panelists have to be available, and then the hearing occurs. So hopefully within 120 days, the whole thing is done. That is our goal for Title IX cases. For everything else, it really depends. It can be from 6 days to 30 days to 60 days to 90 days, depending on the complexity of the case, for formal investigations. Informal is interesting because it can be, it's like a lot of back and forth with the impacted party. Like, what do you want to have happen next? What would you like to do next? And so those can go on for a year or more, but that's because that's what the impacted party wants to have happen. But for formal investigations, for non-Title IX, like we're running about 60 to 70 days right now for like the, for a full investigation, including interviewing multiple cases. Yeah. Yeah.
Is stalking covered in policy 6.4?
Stalking is covered. Yes. Yep.
And then, I'm sorry, just one more question. Are you able to share the slides?
Oh, I'm happy to.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then are you comfortable if we distribute them as well?
It's okay. I think like sometimes some background helps to hear what's on the slides, but there's nothing in there that's like private. So yeah, you can absolutely share them. Yeah.
Any other questions?
So my question was, does your office deal with any cases of harassment or anything of that sort that are sort of anonymous, or instances where one party doesn't know the other party, or just happened one time, or is it only between two parties that know each other?
Oh no. Well, we will handle cases, where there's an anonymous, like it's anonymous or just like something happens. And I'm trying to think of an example. Like we have an obligation to make sure that people are you know, feeling safe and not feeling that they are subject to a hostile environment. And it doesn't matter if we can identify the impact of, or like the respondent, right? So if we don't have a respondent, we can't necessarily do a formal investigation with the respondent, but we can assist the impacted party in like, what do you want to have happen here? How can we help you? We'll try to identify the impacted party. We'll try to like do whatever we can to ensure that the hostile environment stops and doesn't continue. It may be difficult. I mean, if you don't have a respondent, we can't necessarily have a finding that like person B violated the policy, but you know, the conduct perhaps violated the policy. And I think when we're outside of the Title IX world, there are just a lot of, we just have things that we have to do. Like you have to have a respondent in a Title IX case because that's what the federal law says that you have to do. But when we're outside of the Title IX world, and Title IX really is sex-based harassment, right? So anything else, we have a broad latitude to handle it in like a lot of different ways. And we will, we'll be creative to like address situations. And also I should say, if you file online, you can file anonymously. I don't encourage anonymous filing because it then becomes hard to do follow-up, and oftentimes people don't include enough information in anonymous reports for us to do anything about it. But if that's the only way that you will get us the information, we'll take it.
I know you talked about like harassment being something that's under your jurisdiction to like investigate and stuff. Is violence-based harassment also include part of that? Like if there's like any death threats or some sorts that someone's experiencing?
So if it's related to a protected status, yes. Okay. If it's, and but if there are death threats, like we would say you need to contact CUPD because like we are not an emergency responder. Like our hours are 9 to 5, right? So like if that's happening, call 911. So I think in a situation like that, I think what would typically happen, like, so if there's a criminal component happening, right, CUPD would likely, or whatever law enforcement agency would do their law enforcement investigation and then could pass it to us to do a policy assessment and determine whether policy was also violated. So if we have, for example, in the Title IX space, a sexual assault that occurs, law enforcement will do a sexual assault investigation and potentially refer that for prosecution. And then we in Cornell will do a policy assessment and handle that from an administrative policy perspective. They are different systems. They often run concurrently. But so if it is a Cornell affiliated person who's making threats and the threats are related to a protected status, eventually our office should become involved and make a determination as to whether there was a policy violation. And then if there is a policy violation, the sanctions can be anything from like, let's have an educational conversation with the respondent to be like, this is the harm you caused. This is, you know, this is why this is harmful. Here's some reading materials that may be beneficial for you, up to, you know, expulsion or termination. It's like anything.
So in a situation where the victim is scared to report certain things based on maybe due to, you know, like a hierarchical thing or maybe scared to do report, is a third person able to report, and will there be like similar, you know, follow-ups related to those kind of?
So yes, a third person can report. And then what we can do thereafter depends on what is reported. So in that situation that you shared, we are always cognizant of the fact that the reporter may fear those reprisals, right? May fear the retaliation. And so I think it's based on what is reported, what actions we would want to do and what the situation is, because it's always going to be fact specific. So it depends on what information we receive, like the details of the information, and then but we try to address everything that comes, like regardless of whether it's anonymous or not. Yeah, but I would always say, like, please feel free to talk with us. Like, we are not just gonna like pick up and start doing something without, you know, you being a person that's involved in the process. Like, we just won't do that.
All right, we have room for one more question.
Go ahead. Okay. I actually have a more technical question. So I've always heard that at the federal level, it takes a very high bar to establish that somebody has violated Title IX. First of all, is this the same at the state and the city level? And secondly, does Cornell have jurisdiction to operate at a different level to what is prevented by like federal or like state or city law? Secondly, suppose you encounter a situation that does not meet that bar. So suppose you suspect that somebody is discriminating you on the state, some like potential status, but you can't prove it, or something similar, then what can you do about the situation?
Sure. So for the first question, Title IX does define sexual harassment as conduct that is so severe and pervasive and objectively offensive that it prohibits someone from participating in a program or activity. But that is just sexual harassment, right? So things like sexual assault, stalking, dating and domestic violence, there's no assessment of the like severity of the situation. Like those things violate the statute and violate our policy. I think that Cornell Policy 6.4 follows the definition that we have to follow under federal law, but there's always things that can be done, even if it doesn't rise to the level of, you know, sexual harassment, for example, under the policy. It may be something else. It may be another violation. It may be a violation. If it's like two students that are involved, it may be a violation of the student code of conduct. We can always give a no contact order, right? Like if there's problematic conduct going on. So we are bound by the federal regulations in terms of the definition. I will say that we are currently still operating under the 2020 Title IX, Title IX regulations. There are 2024 regulations, but we are enjoined based on a district court in Kansas from implementing them here at Cornell. But soon, hopefully next academic year, we'll be able to use those. And that has a lower standard. It's severe or pervasive, not and. So that'll be better. And then to your second question, what we could do, and we have done in situations where you think that there is conduct that's happening because of a protected status, but you're not sure, we would talk to you and see, what do you want to do? Like, do you want us to talk to the person that's engaging in the conduct and bring it to their attention and let them know that this is how it's impacting you? Would you like us to facilitate that conversation between you and this person? Would you like us to potentially have your DGS facilitate this conversation? Like, what do you want? And we will help you get there. Yeah.
Right, I think that'll be for questions. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Katie, if anyone has any other questions regarding this, can I send them your email? So
yeah, please. Yes, absolutely. Right. Thank you. I have great questions. So this was great. Thank you all. Have a good night.
All right.
Good
night.
And also Danielle.
All right.
Danielle.
Yep. I saw. Hi, Danielle.
Hi.
Let's go up here.
Hello. So I gave a quick question on who you are, but I don't know if you also wanted to give your two cents on yourself to the rest of the GPSA. Up to you.
Yeah.
All right, give me 1 second. All right. Sorry, I am in the middle of getting out of class and getting to a different place. But hello, everyone. Let's see if I can turn this on. My name is Danielle Obisi-Orlu. I'm a second year PhD student in the Department of Government. I study international relations, and yeah, I'm really excited to be part of this body and to listen and to really understand the concerns that are being brought up. I think, like, just jumping into it, I know I came in right at the middle, listening to the addressing discrimination, Title IX, etc. I think it's an important process that we have to learn about, especially because we have so many protected identities on campus, and how do we ensure that we're in a community that feels safe and seen and like the process works. So I'm really excited to jump in where I can and listen to your concerns. And if you ever need to get a hold of me, you can email me. My net ID is DCO36. And yeah, I feel like this is going to be a great time to interact with all of you. And sorry if I'm off camera for a bit, but yeah, if you ever need or want to chat, I'm more than happy to listen. Thank you.
All right, thank you. And with that, we'll now move into our next order of business, which is legislations. Resolution 3 was tabled from the previous meeting, has been brought back into this meeting. Therefore, a whole speech to introduce it is not needed, but a quick recap, if needed, can also be presented by any of the sponsors or authors. Quick recap about what Resolution 3 is.
Yep. So as a quick recap, there are really three big changes in the new guidelines last year. One is the section referring to alcohol, that's policy 4.8. We just refined it to make it more in line with what the university requires. No new additions, really, more so just getting closer to what it should have been before. Two, we recharacterized what tier one is used for. We just making more funding available to more clubs. Relatively simple there. And then lastly, and from what I understand, the bulk of the conversation today is about the old funding and the future of that.
All right. Thank you for that, Anurag. Resolution 3 is brought to you as shown from before. No amendments were made in the previous meeting fully, but I anticipate there to be some amendments in this upcoming discussion. So I'm going to be open for any kind of discussion, any kind of motions on the table, if you so wish. This could be a motion to open the floor for discussion, open the floor for debate, anything.
So I'm going to move to amend the Resolution 3 with the amendment that has been posted to the box just now, and I'm going to read it off here.
Before you read off, I just want to let everyone know to simply go ahead and log into Box, go into GPSA 2024-2025. Within October 21st, 2024, you should be able to see the file saying GPSAFC Funding Guidelines Amendments.pdf. The URL is, I'm kidding.
Okay. So the amendment would read as such, field organizations, each graduate degree granting academic field or professional school as defined by the graduate school is eligible to register one field organization representing the students of that academic community. If necessary, the field's director of graduate studies, DGS, or director of engineering, which I think is mechanical engineering,
yeah,
program, or the professional school's director of student affairs will make the final determination on which organization represents the graduate or professional students of a given field. The GPSA FC will maintain a list of these organizations by contacting the administrative manager or administrative assistant of each academic field or professional school biannually to confirm the continued existence of previously registered field organizations and or to inquire about new field organizations which meet these criteria. C, field organizations are eligible to move a maximum of one funding tier above their placement based on membership, provided all other funding tier criteria are met. And so what this would, what this amendment would do is, because David Brown, our appropriations chair, has seen it as good to remove field funding, this would retain the field organization definition and the benefits conferred on field organizations by Resolution 6 of the 2023-2024 GPSA term, which were put in place to provide equitable funding for smaller field organizations, which are predominantly determined by, or which are entirely determined by the graduate school and the different fields recruitment processes, which graduate students themselves have no real say over. So that is what this amendment would do. And most of the language that was used in this amendment is language that was already there, especially the definition of the field organization. But in writing this, I tried to clarify how exactly these field organizations were defined, and also enumerate the responsibilities of the GPSAFC and what the specific benefit to being designated a field organization would be.
All right. Seeing that this is amendment, but seeing that this is also something that's been discussed in previous years, I am waiving the need to vote to reconsider this amendment and just have it brought in so that y'all can vote to either have it as yes, you want this to be amended, or no, you don't want this to be amended at all. To clarify what that means is that usually in Robert's Rules, you would vote to even consider this in the first place first, and then you would vote on it, but that's very bureaucratic and sometimes, and so just streamline things. That's what I'm going forward with, unless there's any objections to that. We'll move into a discussion period, which would mean discussing on this amendment, people that are in favor of it, why support it, or people that are against it, like what's confusing or all that stuff, or if there's any opportunities for questions or any of the people that wrote the amendment, that could also be discussed right here as well. Entertaining any speakers?
I have a question.
Yes, let's go for it.
So just to reiterate, David had removed that previously because, at least this is what I remember him mentioning, he had removed that because there hasn't been anyone who applied for that funding, so that's why it was taken out, or perhaps I'm mistaken.
Sender?
Yeah, so this needs clarification. So there's a difference between field organizations and field funding. Mm-hmm. So field funding is this program which provided to basically the field organizations as which were defined similarly to what I just stated. It provided these field organizations $200 plus the number of members, the number of members in that organization, in additional funding that did not count towards their funding tiers. What David David has seen that this is that basically it doubles like up on the ways that people can get funding, and with the AIF, which is the it's the diverse, what is AIF exactly?
It's essentially diversity.
Yeah, so it's a diversity funding initiative. David did not see a need for this second funding pathway. However, we in previous resolutions, we had tied the field's funding to this exception, this membership exception for field organizations, which would allow them to move slightly above in terms of funding, the amount that they would get based on membership. And so we need to we can't just full cloth remove that definition, because then we will not have a way of defining these field organizations and then allowing them to take advantage of this exception. There's a distinction between field funding and field organizations, in that field funding is what field organizations got, but field organizations were defined separately.
As a continued discussion, I do want to remind everyone that as it currently stands, the author of the sponsor of this resolution, Resolution 3, is not present and is therefore not able to make any decisions regarding this amendment. However, based off of previous context of the previous meeting, it may be clear that he may be not in favor of the amendment stuff. But also want to remind everyone that for any kind of amendments, you only need a simple majority in order to make that passed. So in the interest of fairness, I just wish for GPS to just consider all those tidbits just to make a more complete decision on this. Any other discussion points regarding this?
Just point of information to Anu, if you could describe what the how the previous clause was being enforced and maybe any perspective on that.
Right. Yeah. Anurag?
Is there a time limit or can
no,
I
just... you can just go ahead.
Okay, cool.
No time limit yet. You want me to?
So to your question also, so up until this year, there was clear mention of guild funding, and people had applied, just not that many, mainly because it wasn't advertised. But I mean, I don't know. You're supposed to read the guidelines every year if you have a club. It's supposed to be something you do. People just didn't do it. As far as how it was enforced, David and I know which groups are guild groups. And so whenever we're reviewing allocations every year, we were a bit more willing to, I guess, compromise with them in terms of letting them go off a tier in funding, or if they're 45 members and they need 50, we'll give them the higher tier and we'll informally enforce the guild funding. A lot of what this amendment would be doing, from my perception, is just formalizing that process, as well as having a centralized list of which those clubs are. Because right now that's very dynamic. But yeah, I don't see any big substantial issues that this would be posing. Monetary otherwise.
Actually, point of inquiry. You just mentioned that you and David know what field, which orgs are field groups,
like,
essentially.
We know in which departments there's only one club aligned to, so that would be de facto.
Okay. I asked that because in the previous meeting, David mentioned that there was no definition of field groups, so I'm a bit confused as what definition y'all were going by that in this case.
The only definition we're using is if it was from a department from which there was only one club, that would be the field one. Mm. But for departments that have multiple, then we have to go to faculty, and that faculty step had not been exercised before.
Understood.
Yeah.
Do we have any other discussion points, questions, comments, concerns?
Yes. To contribute a point of information, this amendment does deviate slightly from the previous incarnation of the SC guidelines as it is related to field-funded organizations, and that is that it removed requirements that members of these organizations that would be eligible for the bump in tier had to attend GPSA meetings and had to sit on the GPSA and be a voting member. It was a very cumbersome system, and so this amendment does away with that. There is no such requirement any longer with this amendment. And they simply have to be recognized by the department's DGS or like representative to be eligible for the benefit.
For full carry.
Yeah.
Jason, point of information on that. So you're saying currently with this resolution, all field organizations would no longer be bound by the need to send at least a member to GPSA, whether it's tier 4 or 5, or that was prior?
This does not change anything having to do with 4 and 5. This is for tiers that are well below that wouldn't ordinarily be sending a member to GPSA. The threshold was much higher for the field funded organizations.
Yeah, before, even if you got tier 1 funding, you had to send a representative every week or every other week. But now, unless you're tier 4 or 5,
it's fine. Do you have any other points? Yes.
I'm just consider moving to amend the amendment for an item D that lists out the current field organizations, so that way there's knowledge of the ones that are set in stone. I'm not going to write it right on the spot, but
that amendment to the amendment can be considered. I personally would frown upon it only because as time goes on, there could be newer fields, newer organizations that come into within departments and stuff, and to have this within literal bylaws as restrictive can be unproductive, and leaving it to simply just something that's allowing for there to be flexibility with the times to be there. But the amendment can still be considered if you wish, unless you wish to rescind it.
Quick question for Mac.
Yeah.
So the Anders amendment already proposes having a biannual updated list. Do you want it to be more frequent than that?
That was going to be the follow-up to the amendment of a certain term limit, so that way it wasn't so stagnant, but if that's already in play, then I'll understand that.
It's still in the thing.
Yeah, I don't know if you're looking at the box, but it written into the amendment is a biannual review of where the GPSA FC would reach out to all those departments and just ensure, like, your department has registered a club as a field organization with the GPSA. Is that club still active? They say no, we take them off the rolls. Your department has never registered a field organization. Do you have one that encompasses your graduate or professional students now? So that's biannually. What the motivation for the biannual amount of time in between was because that is kind of the cycle of GPSA, because GPSA, like, our funding and, like, when we set the student activity fee, it is also a 2-year cycle. So that was just kind of in keeping with the spirit of GPSA. But if it is something that we're worried about, like, we need a more frequent update on that, then I am friendly to moving it to annually or.
Jason?
Point of inquiry, I suppose. Would you, instead of having the explicit organizations listed out in the amendment, have perhaps a public portal or some other way of accessing that information? Was that the, like, crux of what you were interested in, or?
Yeah, so I think it's definitely covered by B, for sure.
I believe there is a website that has all this thing and stuff. It's just not on the governing documents, because having a URL on the documents is kind of weird. But there should be something that's within, like, the university that lists all of that out.
Yeah, it's actually within the graduate school. So if you look up, like, graduate school fields of study, I believe, you will get to both a website and also a concise graphic that has...
It's on the box now.
And it's on the box now. So we got multiple sources. But you will get to a concise graphic where any of the... So it has a very large list... but we are only, the written into the text is only ones that can grant a graduate or professional degree. So the only ones that this would be applicable to are the ones that can do, like, a master's, a PhD, the law school, like, whatever.
A JD?
Yeah, JD. You know, so that those would be the ones covered by this.
Great. Do we have any discussion points? If not, entertaining a motion to move to Fuji's question.
Motion. So moved.
All right. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Ari. Is there any dissent? Reminder, this is a motion to move to Fuji's question regarding this amendment, meaning we're voting on whether this amendment should happen or not. Seeing no objections, the motion passes. All those in favor, please raise your placards. All those in favor of passing this amendment, raise your placards. All right. All those opposed? All right, seeing none, this amendment passes. All right, resolution 3 is now updated to include 0.7 into section 6 of the GPSA FC funding guidelines. And with that, we now return to the entirety of resolution 3, a resolution to update the student organization funding process. Is there any motions on the floor? Motions for open discussion, moving to a vote, which would be the discussion, et cetera. Entertaining anything. Yes.
Previous question.
All right. Motion to interview question and seconded. Is there any dissent? Seeing none, we'll move into previous question for this. All those in favor of passing resolution 3, raise your placards. All right. And all those opposed.
Only want people on Zoom to vote.
Yep. Got the thumbs up from the people there. Yep. All those that wish to oppose, for those opposing, you can just put in a no, I guess. Seeing none, this resolution passes. Congratulations, y'all. All right. And with that, we'll now move into external committee vacancies. See agenda supplementary. Ooh, I love agenda supplementaries. this is the long attempt at elementary. All right. So we currently have vacancies within four committees. The Student Health Benefit Advisory Council description is listed over there within the agenda supplementary. We have also Student Library Council, Transportation Hearing and Appeals Board, and Family Life Advisory. All information's right there. I will be entertaining a motion to open the floor for nominations for any of the four committees. As a reminder, if you wish to open the floor for them, I would also recommend you to also have someone in mind to nominate, whether it be yourself, whether it be the person next to you. Yeah, any.
And also, just to reiterate what these external committees are, so these are a chance for us as GPSA members to go out into the Cornell community at large and get information that we can bring back here and bring back to our constituents about what is happening on our campus. So like the student health benefits, Mac is already on that. We're looking for a PhD, but this is important because these are the people who are making decisions about our health insurance, the health insurance that is provided through the university for people on fellowships or RA ships, TA ships, and also the requirements to have certain levels of health insurance for those who aren't provided it by the university. The Student Library Advisory Council, they work with the library on things like the plans for the renovation, on how they can help students, that kind of stuff. And these are important positions to fill because these can help us to be more engaged in the community and make sure that we know what's going on in our community. That's my pitch.
Noted for the minutes. Do we have any motions?
Point of information?
It's not a
motion.
Oh.
What kind of decisions does the Family Life Advisory Committee make?
Xander, what does the Family Life Advisory Committee do?
And
the decisions it makes?
So I'm not 100% sure, because if you decide to go for that position, then we will be getting in contact with them for the first time. In the past couple of years. Their website is not updated, but we do know they exist. It likely what they are working on is stuff like childcare, how to support students with families in whatever form that takes. This is one that we don't have a lot of information. Part of these external committees is also getting one of our members to go there, or getting someone who we can be like, okay, Family Life Advisory Committee, you need to reach out to this person. And that kind of starts a lot of the wheels turning, especially when things have stopped.
Nicholas Brennan is recognized?
Yeah, if I could respond to your question. So the committee is currently composed of a collection of workers from the Student Health Benefits Committee, Human Resources at Cornell, the Hasbrook Community Center, as well as a number of deans and representatives from around the university. And some things that they do have included putting together, they have a whole page of their accomplishments. They have a website where they've consolidated resources for student parents. They administer the Student Child Grant Program at Cornell to support families who have graduate student parents. Care.com is a resource, and lactation support improvement. So they do a number of initiatives focused on student parents.
Yes.
Kind of like a general question for those who are already in an external committee. How did we get contacted from that committee? Is there like an emailing list or some sort of things like that? Because we elected some few people last meeting to be in some sort of external committee, right? Mm-hmm. But how does it get communicated, or like
So that is between me and Jessica. And so between me and Jessica, one of us will introduce the basically whatever contact information we have for that external organization. We will introduce the student or students who are elected, and hopefully that they will respond. If not, we if that's not happening, we may have to like kind of nudge them. So that's part of why we're doing this external committee stuff, because a lot of these external committees sometimes like run out of steam. Like the people, this is the same thing with the Big Red Barn steering board. The people who, there are actual employees who were on these boards or who were running these boards. And if, when they move on, the kind of institutional knowledge moves on with them. And so when we as an external body send a member to these boards, it kind of like gives them the kick in the pants and is like, are you still here? Like, are you doing this? Like, So if they are not communicating, because you were elected to a position, right? Yeah, so if they are not communicating, then we will, me and Jessica will work on getting them to communicate.
Thank you. We did reach out. I did notify them.
Okay.
All right. In that case, it would be Angel, since you spoke earlier.
Okay, point of information. When does rotation hearing and appeals board meet? It's not listed.
I can tell you things there.
Perfect.
Yeah. So they again are being rebuilt after the pandemic. Typically what happens is there is a group of 12, up to 12 members, and there will be a training for everyone. And then as there are appeals, they will see who's available. So it's not, if you're on that, you don't have to do every single appeal, but you may be available at a time when they need you to. So there's no real time commitment that I can give you. However, I will say last year they didn't even get their training. So hopefully this year, if someone volunteers, they will have training, and some appeals will be looked at.
Other motions? Yes.
I move into, what's the
right? Which committee do you wish to open the floor for nominations?
Transportation.
Transportation hearing appeals. All right. Is there a second?
Second.
Any dissent? No. Sorry. All right. Seeing no dissent. All right. Motion passes. Do you have a nomination?
I nominate
myself. You nominate yourself. You're okay. Yeah, you got it. All right. Great. Do you have any other nominations for this committee? Going once, twice, entertaining a motion to close the floor.
So moved.
Is there a second? Seconded. Dissent? None. Congratulations, Angel. You are in. All right. The Transportation Hearing Appeals Board will be reaching out to you shortly once they take care of that communication. They are referring to Jessica and Xander for the minutes. Anyways, do we have any other motions? We have three other committees to fill vacancies.
What is the expectation with the Student Library Advisory Council? I asked last week, but I just want to know again. Is it that we'd be missing like every other meeting? So you go to one of the library council's meeting, and then the next one you would go to the GPSA. So you would miss one of each.
So as I believe was previously stated, you are expected to come to GPSA meetings in general, and if you are a GPSA voting member. However, if you are in the Student Library Advisory Council and there is a clear time conflict, then because you're going to the Student Library Advisory Council for the purpose of representing GPSA, it would then be counted as GPSA participation and then would be waiving your absence from a GPSA meeting. Because it would be unfair for you to be penalized to go to a meeting that GPSA is attending.
My
understanding is you would just attend those meetings listed and just not the same ones.
Yeah. It is a sacrifice you'll be willing to make, I guess. Or not.
I think you were also, asking about, maybe doing, kind of half and half. Mm-hmm. And I think that, if we can't get anybody to go to all of these meetings, going to half of these meetings is a radically better amount of meetings than no meetings. So if you're like, I really enjoy being here and I want to be, and I don't want to miss every other GPSA meeting, I'd rather miss a quarter of GPSA meetings. That is so much better than coming to all of these and having no representation at the Student Library Advisory Council. I believe the head librarian comes to this meeting as well. So these are real people who are actually employed here, who are trying to do stuff. Elaine, who is the head librarian here, she has big goals for the library. So she would love to have a graduate student representation.
All right. Do we have any other motions? If not, we can. Any motions for nominations? Going once, twice and a half. Twice. All right. Better luck next time. All right. We will now move into new business. It is not listed on the agenda. And this is a bit of a late addition, but it is imperative that I bring this to the GPSA. So every semester it is expected for GPSA to share the presence of the university president in this very room. This happens in the fall semester, and in the spring semester they come into one meeting for GPSA. And so this happens for the GPSA, happens for the student assembly, happens for all the people within the shared governance and stuff. However, it has come to our attention that President Pollock would not be available with, sorry, not Pollock. Whoa, Pollock. Sorry, I see Pollock on my thing. Pollock, yes. So President Pollock's schedule does not align with any of our current meetings for the fall semester, which would be sad because that would make it a 3 semesters in a row where a university president has not shown up to a GPSA meeting for scheduling conflicts. However, we were informed that they would be available for Monday, December 2nd, if we have a meeting, which we currently do not. As per GPSA bylaw guidelines, a additional meeting can be called should there be a vote in favor of that. The vote would be a 2/3 majority, and there's 31 seats of voting members within the GPSA, meaning 20 votes is needed in order for this to occur. And so I am asking you all if you wish to have a meeting on December 2nd on Monday, 5 p.m. to 6:30 p.m. to share the presence of the university president, get to listen more about what he has to say, what his current perspectives and goals and trajectories of the university he has, and for you to also have the opportunity to ask questions to him directly. If this is of interest, I would encourage y'all to vote in favor. If this is not your interest, I would encourage you to vote nay, not in favor. It is up to y'all. I also want to bring this up because I do know that December 2nd is also when we have finals week. So for those that are helping out TAs and stuff, that could also be a bit of a doozy, especially late at night. I know, yeah, TAing is so sad during finals week. Yes.
Motion to extend the meeting by 10 minutes.
All right, a motion has been made to extend it by 10 minutes. Is there a second? Seconded by Matt. Is there a dissent? Seeing none. All right. New meeting time ending at 6:40. So yeah. That's my whole spiel for this meeting. Yes.
Point of information. I slightly remember that there's a limit to the number of extra meetings we can schedule. I think we can only schedule one extra or something.
Yes, and we have scheduled none so far.
Okay. Is there? My only concern is there could be another reason why we want to schedule an additional meeting, and by passing this amendment, it means we can't schedule another meeting this semester. Yeah, so I think this should also be discussed before we vote whether to accept that resolution.
Of course, we can still have a discussion period regarding this and stuff. I personally will say that we are coming close to like the end of the fall semester. We're like halfway there. And I think at this point, we do have a good idea of like how we're looking at the agenda and stuff. But you're right, it is a really important thing to consider as well, because things that are imminent or like suddenly happening, which is not what imminent means, things that could be like suddenly appearing could happen and may warrant that other meeting. Yes, you're right about that.
Yes, just to clarify, other than the two meetings we have a month of habit. So if there's something of importance, it better happen sooner or later.
Mm-hmm. Right, Alex?
Point of information.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's if I use that right.
If you want, if you're asking to get more information, point of information, if you just
point
want
of,
to give
information, not point of information.
If you
just
want to,
giving
like, if you want to give your 2 cents, you can just talk. No,
okay.
Number points.
2 cents then. I just double checked the academic calendar, and December 2nd, you said, was the meeting?
December 2nd, yes.
That is still during instruction. That is not finals week. Study period is starting December 13th.
Yes, and point of inquiry, I saw in the calendar that the meeting was on the 2nd, even though in the box we don't actually have that. So in the calendar invite, it still has a 2nd, but
I'll wave you to Jessica for this.
I think that was a mistake, but we've left it on there because previously we've been talking about October 7th, rescheduling, and now we're talking about potentially adding up for this. So we have left it in there, but you are correct. It was a mistake for us to put it on the calendar because that was not part of the approved schedule.
All right. Any other points of discussion? Yes.
Also, given the short time frame of something that could potentially happen, there's also like the holiday at the end of November that most of us won't even be here for a good part of the week, if not more. So I think we should strongly consider doing the 2nd.
All right. If there are no discussion points, entertaining a motion to move to the previous question on this.
So moved.
All right. Is there a 2nd?
Seconded.
Is there any objections? Seeing none. All right. We've
motion to adopt new business by unanimous consent.
All right. Is there a 2nd for that?
Seconded.
All right. Seeing no objections, we're gonna adopt with that. Because we do need a 2/3 majority, I'm actually gonna ask for a roll call vote for this one. We have not done this before. I'm gonna need you to read out the names, and then they will have to say aye or nay. And aye vote means in favor of this, nay, they don't want to meet on December 2nd. And if you can't make a decision, you can abstain.
So, please.
And since there are 22 people, oh no, because
that's
it's
more now.
Yeah, because it's in bylaws. So yeah, we still need 20 people to vote in favor of this for happen, regardless of quorum amounts and stuff. So whenever you're ready, you can begin.
Jessica, should I just read all the names?
Or... Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Francine Acklin.
Aye.
Why is that? She said aye.
She said aye.
Okay.
Oh, look at that.
She said aye.
Right. Yeah, I said aye.
Sweet.
Samantha Bloom. Nicholas Brennan.
Aye.
David Brown. Cameron Chappell.
Aye.
Jason Chabirko.
Aye.
Coral Douglas. Andy Garcia Ortiz. Irene Gatimi.
Aye.
Elizabeth Gatz. Alicia George. Dinesh Gemeyer. Shrinika Hampi.
Aye.
Mac James.
Aye.
Ayushi Kapoor. Shrikant Karaikal.
Aye.
Ocean Kareem.
As chair, I will abstain.
Anurag Koyata.
Aye.
Ava Legressa.
Aye.
Alex Lando.
Aye.
Zhongyan Liu.
Aye.
Xander Lynch.
Aye.
Salman Matan.
Aye.
Clarice Meffert.
Hi.
Dian Nguyen. Kunj Patel. Angel Puder.
Hi.
Seem Sepp.
Hi.
Cindy Wong.
Hi.
Yuting Wu.
Abstain.
Issa Yaya.
She's unmuted and is in Zoom. Kisa. Oh, she's still there.
Thanks. Anticipation.
Oh, in chat. Hi. Thank you, Issa.
We got
20. Yep. With 20 to 0 to 2 abstains. All right. We have a December 2nd meeting. All right. And with that, we'll now move into our general announcements. Do we have any? Seeing none, I am entertaining motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn.
All right. Is there a second?
Okay.
All right. Thank you, y'all. We have done.